Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour Editorial Review is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on global warming when we come back. You know, once in a while, we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. And Swinton outraged all of his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now, you know it, and I know it. Now, he made that statement in 1880. Now, there isn't one of you, he said, who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. And I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes, and we're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings, and we dance. Our talents and our possibilities and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, that's a pretty powerful statement. Well, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program and the New World Order. They're the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and the Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, call and order our free compact disc package. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. It's a place to start. And you can call right now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And order your own free package. If you're online, you can go to our website and order it there. Just go to georgegordon.org and click onto the email. And then send us an email request. And that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Global warming, it's on everybody's lips. Hardly a newscast goes by, whether it's on the CBS Evening News or whether you're reading about it in USA Today or you're reading a paper. You're going to read an article or a reference, or somebody's going to say something about global warming. Now, global warming's only been around for the last 10 or 15 years. Somebody brought it up about 1990. I think that was about the first time I've heard of it. So I guess we're pushing on 20 years now for this thing called global warming, but somebody raised the issue and they said, hey, the Arctic ice cap, or the Antarctic cap, you know, the ice cap is melting, or the temperature is rising around the world, you know, and I don't think anybody thought much about it. It's just, you know, scientists, you know, they make statements and then they get picked up by the press, and then the press publishes it and they tell us a little something about it, and then we forget about it. It's nothing of any great importance. But this global warming thing has been going on now for 20 years, and it's increasing in its diatribe. I mean, these guys are really selling the global warming program now. And our former Vice President Al Gore, he wrote a couple of books. He got a Nobel Prize the other day. And he's been hot and heavy on this thing called global warming. And what they're suggesting is that we shut down all of our power plants. Well, that's the end result. I mean, they don't come out and say, well, let's shut them all down. But the ultimate end to that is that you're going to pay a whole lot more for your electricity, and you're going to use a whole lot less of it. That's what they're proposing. So that's not very good news. I mean, we don't want to use less electricity, and we don't want to pay any more for it. But that's what they're telling us. And so I thought, well, okay. What's the catalyst behind this? You know, you don't just go out here. Politicians, you know, they're a crafty bunch. They don't just go out here and start selling something because there's no purpose behind it. Now, they come to us and they say, well, we need to protect you people from yourselves. You're burning up too much electricity in the process. You're putting too much carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And as a result of that, you're causing global warming, and it's going to flood the world, and millions of people are going to be infected, and it's just going to be terrible, and so we're going to have to save you from it. And right away, I get nervous when politicians want to save me. We got politicians out here now trying to give us national identification for our livestock. And somehow or another, they figure that that'll save us. And then you got Hillary and Barack over here. They want to give us socialized medicine. They figure, well, that'll save these people. They're in danger. They need this health care. And I don't deny that you people are sick, but I deny that you need health care insurance, or that health care insurance or socialized medicine is going to solve your health problems. There's a solution, but that's not it. Well, this global warming thing over here has a solution, but shutting down the power plants isn't it. There's a solution to it. There's a cause, and then there's an effect that's going on. So I got to looking at it, and I said, hey, Dirk, run over there to the computer and start pulling up some articles here on global warming. And let me sit down and see if I can digest this global warming story. And so I want to start it off here with 25 reasons not to fight global warming. So I read these 25 reasons, and I look at it, and I said, you know, I think this guy's making some sense. Now, I read a story here. The politicians have a plan for this global warming. We've got to fight global warming, and of course, when we fight global warming, it costs money. And right away, I started putting two and two together, and I said, oh, I see why we've got global warming, and we need more money. Politicians never have enough money. If they had, I remember this story one time. I was testifying one time at the before the I think it was the Education Committee in the Idaho House of Representatives, and I had dug up some facts, and I'll show you how this works. In 1889, Idaho was granted statehood, and in 1889, the day that they received statehood, there was no public school system, and they didn't have one. They had to create it from scratch. So in 1889, 1888, 1887, they did not have $1, not 1%, no money at all, was allocated to public education. So the politicians said, well, we can't have that. We've got to have money for public education. And so they voted in a little money for public education. I don't know how much, but it was something. It went from zero to something. Well, the day that I was testifying, the school districts, the school board, the National Association for Teachers, had come into the legislature, and they proposed that they needed to up the amount of money that was being spent in Idaho on education. So I thought to myself, well, how much of the state budget right now today, this is back in 1982, 3, 4, along there, how much of the state budget in Idaho is being allocated to education? And the answer was 75%. So if you take all of the activities of the state of Idaho, and you could just extrapolate this into your state, New York, Florida, Pennsylvania, wherever you live, or your country, Germany, South Korea, Japan, wherever you're living, you know there was a time before public education, and there's a time right now. How much of your government's budget goes to education? And the answer at that time was 75%. Now, you know, governments, they have other priorities. They've got interest on the debts, and they've got streets and roads and bridges to build, and they've got salaries to pay for public employees and ice to clear off the streets and highways and traffic lights to put up. And, you know, there's other expenses that governments have. And 75% goes to just one area of government, and that's education. That's in the state of Idaho. And so I took a look at the history of it, and sure enough, every single year from 1889 to 1983, the Department of Education comes into the legislature and asks for more money. Now remember, in 1889, they had zero, and so it went to 1%, 2%, 5%, 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%. By 1983, they had 75%, and they were still coming back for more money. So when it was my time to testify, I got up and I testified to this, and I said, well, I got a suggestion here. I gave the committee members the little background. I said, you know, in 1889, public education had zero funding, and today it's 75%. That's 75 cents out of every tax dollar that's paid by all the people of Idaho for any and all causes goes to education. I said, you'd think that if one area of government gets 75% of the entire budget, that would be adequate. But obviously it isn't. So my proposal is this. Since the Department of Education has come back every single year from 1889 to 1983 asking for more money, and every single year the legislature gives them more money, I would propose this year that we give them all that they're asking for. Let's give them 100% of all of the tax revenues collected in the state of Idaho for any cause and reason. Everybody was sitting there at the table. They looked at me like, I must not have heard that correctly. It was so outrageous. The suggestion was so outrageous. And so I repeated it. I said, you heard me right. I said, let's give the Department of Education 100 cents out of every dollar, because it's obvious that 75 cents isn't enough. And they're just going to be back here next year asking for more money, and the year after, and the year after. They're going to be back here every year until they ultimately get 100%. That's obviously what they're after. 50% wasn't enough. 60% wasn't enough. 75% isn't enough. So let's give them 80, 85, 90. Hell, let's just get it over with. Let's give them 100% of all of the money collected in the state of Idaho. Then they have to be satisfied, and there's no purpose for them to come back again next year asking for more money. They've already got all there is. My proposal was not acted upon, and they did not get 100%, but they got a raise. And they've been back every year, every year, every year. Now, ultimately, they're going to get it all. Or somebody's going to wake up along the line and start cutting them back. I mean, you know, you got to do something one way or another. The status quo never lasts. They'll either get more or they'll get less. They're never going to get just exactly the same. This global warming is warming up to being just exactly that kind of a problem. These people that are advocating a solution to global warming evidently do not believe that God is in control of the universe, or that God is in control of planet Earth, or that God, you know, in his own wisdom, can determine what the temperature of the Earth ought to be. For my part, I do not know what Earth's temperature should be. I haven't got a clue. I didn't get here until 1939, and I noticed that between 1939 and today, things have been going along pretty well. I noticed that from time to time, some years are warmer than others, that some summers are hotter, some winters are warmer, some winters are colder than others. And the scientists, they go around taking these temperatures, and then they come back and they say, well, there's this average. There's this average. They don't just do it, you know, here in the United States. They do it all over the world. And I guess, you know, if you're a scientist and you haven't got anything more intelligent to do, I guess you can go out and measure the temperature. Although, I'd like to suggest that back in 1803, nobody was out measuring the temperature. As far as I know, back in 1750, nobody was worrying about the temperature. Or back in 800 AD or 800 BC or 3000 BC, I don't see any historical records where people were running around measuring the temperature and wringing their hands in great despair, crying out to their gods, oh my God, save us from global warming. I don't see any reference to that. In fact, I just mentioned, I said, I don't think I can remember anybody even bringing the subject up until about 1990 or somewhere along there. But now all of a sudden, hardly a newscast goes by. I mean, CBS and NBC have both run long specials. I mean, they've sent correspondents down to Antarctica and up to the North Pole, and they're doing specials up there, and they're showing us how the ice is melting. And then when they get through showing us how the ice is melting, which I guess we can't deny because I saw some satellite pictures the other day, and they said, well, here's what the North Polar region looked like in 1960, and here's what the polar region looks like in 2007. And sure enough, there was a great difference in the amount of ice that was visible there from the space satellite. Now, I want to point out to you, boys and girls, that the difference in the amount of ice coverage over the North Pole in January is greater than it is in July. And I don't know when they were taking these satellite pictures, and so right away I thought to myself, I'll tell you what I think. Because about half the ice up in the polar region melts in the summertime. Did you know that? And so when I saw the picture, and it showed the ice coverage of the North Pole, and hell, the whole Arctic Ocean was covered by ice, you know, clear down to the Aleutian Islands, or where the Aleutian Islands start. And then they showed the next picture, and it was melted off about halfway up to the North Pole itself, which is just exactly what I would expect between July and January. And you know, they never said, now here's two pictures, one of them was taken in January, and here's the other one taken in January. They didn't show me a series of pictures showing me every January the ice coverage between 1990 and 2007. They showed me a satellite picture that went back to the 1960s, I think it was 68. And then they showed me a satellite picture from 2007, and they never told me whether it was summer or winter. And I got suspicious right there. I said, now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. What you're trying to do here is to paint a picture, and you can certainly paint a picture. And the conclusion is that there's all this global warming, and because of this global warming, the polar ice caps are melting. Now they go over to Greenland, and they say, well, now Greenland's, all the ice caps over there are melting, and if we take all the ice in Greenland, and we melt it, and it all goes into the ocean, it's going to raise the oceans by so much. Well, wait a minute. I'm not so sure that that's true either. Because have you ever seen some statistics, you know, on this thing of how much fresh water is available in the world? Yeah, it's not very much. If you took all of the fresh water in the world and put it into a pile and compared it with the oceans, that's the salt water, it only amounts to about 1%. Did you know that? 1%. All right. Now, it's true that there's a lot of ice down in Antarctica, and it's true there's a lot of ice up in the North Pole, and it's true that there's a lot of ice, you know, over on Greenland. I don't deny it. There's a lot of it there. And there's a few icebergs and ice caps and glaciers around the world. But if you took and you melted every drop of water in the world, it would increase the volume of the oceans by 1%. And that's assuming that you took all the water in Lake Michigan, Lake Superior, the Aral Sea, all of the lakes around the world and dump them into the ocean also, it would only amount to 1%. And I thought, well, then we could expect about a 1% increase in the level of the ocean. I mean, if you took all the water in the world that's locked up in Lake Superior, and locked up on Greenland, and locked up on Antarctica, and locked up here and there, and you took all that water and you melted it and dumped it in the ocean, if it amounts to 1% of all the water in the world, and that's because, you see, the oceans are big and they're deep. The oceans cover two-thirds of planet Earth. Two-thirds. And not all of the one-third that's left is covered with water and ice. Most of it's desert and mountains. And yeah, there's a lot of snow up in the Himalaya Mountains, and there's a lot of ice, you know, in Antarctica. But it only amounts to 1%. So right away I got to thinking about that, and I said, you know, it is pretty logical, you know, just as Joe Sixpack sitting here, it is logical that if you melted all those ice caps and you dumped that water into the ocean, it would probably raise the level of the ocean. It would raise the level of the ocean, it looks like to me, if I do my math right, about 1%. So, you know, you just add 1% to the tide, and then how much flooding are you going to have around the world? I mean, it's true, it's probably not good, especially if you're living down in Key West, Florida, but I don't think it's disastrous. And furthermore, I'm not so sure that we're going to do much about this. And I'll tell you what I read here not too long ago. There's an article I was picked up, and there's a plan being bantied about in Washington, D.C. I don't know about your government where you live around the world, but here in the United States, they're talking about a carbon tax. They want to tax gasoline $1 a gallon. $1 a gallon for gasoline. Now, boys and girls, I don't know about you, but it looked like to me that $3.50 gas was a pretty good price. Now, over in Europe, you people are paying $6 a gallon for gas. And then we here in the United States are paying about $3.50, or a little less right now, but around $3.50. In round numbers, we've been paying about half what you people are paying for gasoline. And somehow or another, you guys over there in Europe are making it, you know, by hook and by crook. And so I kind of figured that, well, if we were paying $6 a gallon for gas, I think we'd probably make it too. It would change the way we live our lives here. There's little doubt about that. See, I don't drive as much as I used to. You know, when gasoline is 30 cents a gallon, you drive more than when it's 60 cents a gallon. You know, you might not drive half as much, but, you know, when the price doubles, you'll cut back a little. And I noticed now, the other day, I filled up my tank, and it was $78. So I went in, and I paid my bill, you know, it was $78. And I said to this young fellow was taking my money, I said, son, I bought a car in 1956. It was a 1934 Chevrolet four-door sedan. It was an old car. I paid $50 for it. As I got my receipt, I said, I paid more money today to fill my tank than I paid for my first car in 1956. Yep, that's right. Money has deteriorated in this country to such a degree that helped with the amount of money that we're paying for gas, how we could have bought a car, for crying out loud. And that's back in the days when gasoline was 25, 30 cents a gallon, 1956. But that's also a time when money was worth more. And see, this fiat currency that you've got today is just trash. Let me show you what's happening. 1930, when we had gold and silver coin, a 1 ounce gold coin, a $20 double eagle, was valued at $20.67. That was a double eagle. Today, that double eagle is worth over $1,000. Now, that's not because gold is scarce and gold costs more money. It's because you've printed so much paper money that the money has gone down in value. So if we were to take the $1,000, just round it off here, divided by 20, that's 50. Your money has depreciated by 50 times, which is just about right. The dollar today has 2 cents of purchasing power left compared to 1930. Today, what you're paying a dollar for would have cost 2 cents in 1930. All right, so in 1930, we were paying 17 cents a gallon for gas. So let's take 17 cents times 50. And the price of gasoline today should be $8.50 a gallon. And it's not. It's only $3.50. So I'm looking at it and saying, geez, you know, as long as the price of gas is under $8.50 and the purchasing power of our money has gone down by 50 times, gasoline is a bargain at $3.50 a gallon. And for you Europeans, you know, gasoline at $6 a gallon is a bargain at $6 a gallon. Should be $8.50, measured in dollars. So, you know, you can look at the glass and you can say, God, the glass is half empty, or you can look at the glass and say, Jesus, 90% full. I'm not complaining about the price of gas at $3.50. Now, I would complain in this regard. Back in 1930, you know, you were making $5 a day. And, you know, if we took $5 a day, let's just take $5 here, and multiply that times 50, you should be making $250 a day. $250 a day, because wages in 1930 ranged between, you know, about a dollar an hour, 60 cents an hour, to about, maybe a dollar and a quarter, something like that. And Henry Ford in 1913 introduced the $5 day, and of course there were people that were making less than $5 a day. You know, and I don't know what the average was in 1930, but Henry Ford introduced that $5 day back in 1913. Nothing much changed between 13 and 30. And I'd say, well, you know, you're probably making $5. Now, today, there are people making $250 a day, you know, doctors, lawyers, and people like that. But, you know, the average truck driver isn't making $250 a day. In fact, my boy said the other day he could put on about 650 miles at 40 cents. How much is he making? 650 miles times 0.40. Well, that's $260 a day. My boy driving truck can make $260 a day if he's really hustling. Really hustling. He can make the same amount of money that he was making in 1930. But you know, most of you people can't do that. Most of you people aren't making $250 a day, and that's what your problem is. All right, now I've digressed here a little bit because I wanted to give you a little understanding about how government works. And the government lies to us all the time. And they've come up with a lie here called global warming. Why? What's the motive? What's the purpose behind it? Well, the answer is they want to impose upon us a carbon tax of $1 a gallon, and we use 6 billion gallons or 6 billion barrels of oil a year here in the United States. So let's put 600,000. Let's try 600 million, see if that'll work. My calculator doesn't get up into these trillions and quadrillions and things like that. My calculator was made years ago when we were still talking about hundreds and thousands. Now we're getting into the big money now, trillions of dollars. And so let's take 6 billion barrels of oil. And let's multiply that times 42. And my calculator just went to E, like error, error, error. So obviously we can't even put in 6 million. Let's put 600,000 in here, okay? And let's go times 42. Well, that'd give us 200. 1,000. Let's see how many. That's 6 billion barrels times. Is that 25 billion or is that 252 billion? I'm kind of losing track of all these ciphers over here. But if you've got a calculator and you can multiply 42 times 6, let's go 6 times 42. Let's try that one. Get rid of all these zeros altogether. Just go 6 times 42. That would be $252 billion. That's the price. Thereafter, a $252 billion tax increase on petroleum products. They're going to take all those gallons of oil that come into this country, place a carbon tax on it of a dollar a gallon. That's going to tax $252 billion a year. Well, I don't know how much that's going to raise the price of gas, but it's going to raise the price of gas by something. And that's going to depreciate your standard of living. And this isn't a Republican or a Democratic issue. I mean, if you think you're going to vote these guys in or out of office, I think you're whistling Dixie through a straw hat. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here. We're talking about global warming, but I want to tell you here for the FCC and various government agencies around the world that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, now we spent a little time here looking at some background to give you a little understanding about government and about their motives and about their operations. And now, here's 25 reasons that we're wasting our time fighting this thing called global warming. 25. You know, the China Daily says, abnormal weather tells us we must protect our environment and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The World Health Organization says humans are seriously affected by climate change. Climate change is a global threat, and measures must be taken to combat it. The United Nations says the average temperature of the world could rise by 6.3 degrees centigrade by the end of this century. An average rise of 3 degrees centigrade could, 1, cause floods in Asia affecting 7 million people, cause food shortages affecting more than 100 million people. It could cause food shortages affecting more than 100 million, and therefore everyone must participate in the fight to safeguard the global environment. Well, I agree. Everyone must participate in the fight to safeguard our global environment, but one, not because of human-caused global warming, and not because global warming is harmful to the environment, and not because the climate models are predicting the end of the world as we know it. First of all, humans do not cause global warming. Over the past 3,000 years, the average Earth temperatures have been around 23 degrees centigrade. The temperatures in 2006 were exactly 23 degrees centigrade on average. Now, the present glacier shortening began in 1800, and it was not increased, and it has not increased, in intensity as a result of human hydrocarbons. Read more. Temperatures correlate to solar activity. They do not relate to hydrocarbon use. Read on. It's not the humans who are causing the increase in temperatures. It's just the way things are. Read more. Hydrocarbon use is uncorrelated with temperature. Temperature rose for a century before significant hydrocarbon use. Temperatures rose between 1910 and 1940, while hydrocarbon use worldwide was almost unchanged. Temperatures then fell between 1940 and 1972, while hydrocarbon use rose by 330%. The 150 to 200 year slopes of the sea level and glacier trends are unchanged by the very large increase in hydrocarbon use after 1940. Read on. Rainfall, tornadoes, and violent storms are not increasing. Read more. For two, global warming is beneficial to the environment. Read on. Modest warming would help crops, not hinder them. Read on. An increase in CO2 carbon dioxide will make the world's forests healthier and more robust, allowing them to support more wildlife and more vegetation. More moisture in the air results in more snowfall, which in turn means more polar ice. Read on. There is little reason to expect tropical plagues to increase naturally. Terrifying claims have proven wrong. No acid rain, no cancer from pesticides, and population explosion is expected to peak. Read more. Global warming chief proponent, Dr. Schneider, admitted he is willing to misrepresent the facts if it will stir up the public over the correct causes. And I'm going to pause here and give you the webpage where that site comes from. The chief proponent of global warming is a fellow named Schneider. And I want to point out, and I started off today by pointing out a fellow by the name of John Swinton. Remember that guy, John Swinton? Swinton is the guy that said in the final analysis that we are intellectual prostitutes, and speaking of the members of the press, scientists are whores. They haven't always been whores, but I've been observing science and scientists over the past, I've had my eyes on them over the past 30 years, starting about 1980. Prior to 1980, if a scientist told me that the world was upside down, I would have believed him because he was a scientist. Then I started watching the scientists and paying attention, and I noticed a very important facet. You can take any subject in science, I don't care what it is, just name it, whatever you like, and there will be scientists who will be for it, and there will be scientists who are against it. And boys and girls, that's not science. That's opinion. Let me repeat it. Any science that you want to talk about, let's take medicine. And you can talk about cancer within the discipline of medicine. And there are medical doctors that have all been to college and got letters after their names, and real smart people. And one of them will take one side, and then another one will take the exact opposite side on the cause of cancer or any subject matter concerned with cancer or anything in between. And that's exactly the opposite to what science is and what it stands for.
Now, science is knowledge. If you look it up in the dictionary, science is knowledge. Now, knowledge is absolute. You know, it's like math, you know. You got 2 and 2 is 4, and 4 and 4 is 8. And then 8 times 8 is 64, remember? All right, that's absolute, and everybody can agree with that. That's science. Now, when one scientist comes along and says the world is warming, and another scientist comes along and says the world is cooling, and a third scientist comes along and says there's no change, excuse me, boys and girls, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that, okay, let's ask them over what period of time. Well, let's take over the last 100 years. Some scientists say the world is warming, some scientists say no change, and some scientists say that it's actually cooling. And I'm sitting here saying, well, okay, I'm reading to you 25 reasons why we should not get concerned about global warming. So, okay, my job here is to take on controversial subjects. Global warming is one of those controversial subjects. Let's research it out and let's get to the bottom line. They can't all be right. They could all be wrong, and there could be some fourth answer out there that we haven't thought of or we don't know about. So when I opened today, I said I saw a picture taken by the space satellites, and it showed the North Pole, and it was played by Katie Couric on the CBS Evening News. And they showed the polar ice cap in 1968, and it was covered all of the Arctic Ocean. And then they showed one that was taken in 2007, and it was about one-third melted off. What they didn't tell me is what time of year did they take the picture in 1968, and what time of year did they take the picture in 2007? Because if they took the picture in July of 2007, and they took the picture in January of 1968, I would expect about one-third of the ice to be melted out of the Arctic Ocean, because that's what it does every year. I think it was a propaganda play is what my gut reaction is. And I just read to you, number 16 here, global warming, the chief proponent, Dr. Schneider, admitted that he is willing to misrepresent the facts if it will stir up the public over the correct causes. Now, misrepresent means lie. What that means to us truck drivers is, this guy says, I'm willing to lie about global warming if it'll stir you up and get you excited about it. Okay. So right away, I say to myself, well, now I can't believe these scientists and their opinions. Now, what we'd like to do is to get the facts. Now, I would concede that maybe global warming is occurring. And I'm going to show you in succeeding programs that global warming has been going on, and then global cooling has been going on in historic times. For instance, to give you another illustration here, the Colorado River between 1940 and 1960 was running at about 15 million acre feet per year. Today it's running around 5 to 7 million acre feet. In historic times, there have been other times in the past when it ran 5 to 7 million acre feet a year. It varies. And sometimes we get more rain and sometimes we get less. And sometimes in historic times, the average temperature of the earth has been warmer than it is right now today, and it has been colder than it is right now today. So that doesn't tell me that we're in some kind of a dire circumstance. Now, you can rest assured that the powers that be are going to play this propaganda role in the press, and ultimately they're going to succeed. They always do, so there's no reason to believe they won't now. They will propagandize you over the war in Iraq until you finally say, you know, I think we need to go to war in Iraq. And then they got their war in Iraq, and then you wake up 4 or 5 years later and you say, I'm not so sure that that was a good idea. Okay, now they're going to propagandize you on global warming, and one of these days you're going to vote for global warming, and then they're going to put on a dollar a gallon tax on gasoline, and they'll spend that $252 billion to enslave you more, and you'll wake up one day and you'll say, I'm not so sure that that global warming was such a good idea. Now, once a law gets passed, it's nigh on to impossible to repeal it. A law is easier to get passed than it is to get repealed. It's just the nature of the beast. So you want to avoid adding or taking away from the law. Just leave the law alone. In fact, there's two statements in Scripture, two statutes that we got from God himself, and he said, don't add to this law that I'm giving you, and don't take anything away from it. Now, I said I was going to give you the website here, so if you're ready for this, it's www.thebizofknowledge. Now, it's the BIZOF. I don't know what that means. Evidently, it's, let me try it this way, thebizofknowledge.com. That's what I think it is. thebizofknowledge.com. 2008-01. So evidently, that's January 2008. And this is where Dr. Schneider admitted that he's willing to misrepresent the facts if it will stir up the public over the correct causes. Now, the correct causes in Dr. Schneider's estimate is his view of global warming. His view. And he wants to persuade you to his view, and he's willing to lie to do that. All right, now number 17, the solutions of expensive energy would reverse worldwide trends toward greater affluence, decreasing birth rates, and better health. And for three, far-reaching climate predictions cannot be made. Let me underline that one. Far-reaching climate predictions cannot be made. Hell, my local weatherman cannot predict the weather, for crying out loud, with any degree of accuracy. Now, they're much more accurate, and they actually give us some pretty good information. I'm not taking away from the weatherman over here because they're pretty good. Like the other day, they said it was going to rain last night, starting late in the afternoon. And sure enough, at 6:30, it started raining, and it rained. Now, they said it was going to rain somewhere between 3 and 5 inches. They said they got this god-awful storm coming. So I went out and moved hay yesterday. I mean, I moved a bunch of it. I got it in position. I got cows down here that are about out of hay, and I'm going to have to feed them this morning. Last night, it rained. Well, they were right about part of it. They were right that it was going to start raining late in the afternoon, and at 6:30, it started raining. And they were wrong about the amount of rain because it didn't rain 3 to 5 inches. It probably rained about a quarter of an inch all night. Yeah, there were thunderstorms in the area, and they were right about that. Thunderstorms are coming. But and they're pretty good guys, and I don't complain about them. But when a guy tells me that there's a 60% chance of rain, now think about this for a minute. He says there's a 60%, there's a 70, there's an 80% chance of rain. All right. If it rains, he was right. But hey, if it doesn't rain, he was also right. Isn't he? I mean, hell, I can flip a coin and tell you that it's going to rain. You know, I could tell you there's a 50% chance that it's going to rain tomorrow. Hell, there's a 50% chance that it's going to rain tomorrow every day of the year, 365 days a year. There's a 50% chance of rain. And when I hear the guy come on the air and say there's a 50% chance of rain, I got to sit there and say, I wonder how many people actually believe that fool. I wonder if that fool actually believes his own propaganda. Hell, I don't know anything about the weather, but I'm smart enough to know that there's always a 50% chance of rain. And hell, even if the guy says there's a 90% chance of rain, now he's getting up there to where it's probably going to rain, Bob. But if it doesn't rain, I think he was right. It just fell into that 10% and it didn't rain. Now, when we come here to global warming, far-reaching climate predictions over the next century. Now, I want you to notice here that the United Nations says, let me back up here and we'll go back here to one of these little stories up here. They say over here over the next 100 years. Yeah. The UN says the average temperature of the world could rise by 6.3 degrees centigrade by the end of the century. All right. That's true. That's true. Now, let me give you my prediction. The average temperature of the world could decrease by 6.3 degrees centigrade by the end of this century. Both of those statements are true and historically correct because the temperature of the world has increased and decreased by 6.3 degrees centigrade over the last 1,000 years. Well, let me go 1,500 years because it was 800 AD when we had this cold age. Now, I'm going to report to you on that. You know, we can go back and we can look at dendrochronology. We can take a look at the growth rings in trees. Now, that's a pretty good science. I like science. I'm not opposed to science. I'm just opposed to scientists with an axe to grind, scientists that lie, and scientists that have a personal opinion that they then turn around and call science. You know, that's not science. Now, I give you my personal opinions. You know, I come on here and I say, well, that's what I think about it. And you know what my opinion's worth? It's worth about 2 cents. It's just that's my opinion. That's what I think. Based upon my experience, based upon what I've seen, what I heard, what I know, this is about where I think this is going to lead. Now, we're going to have a dollar a gallon carbon tax. You can rest assured that Al Gore, George Bush, and the scientists and the CBS Evening News and Brian Williams, all of these people are in favor of it. All of these people want it. And you're going to get it. But honest to God, boys and girls, I can't see where a dollar a gallon carbon tax is going to benefit you. If $3.50 gas ain't enough, you know, I guess $4.50 gas would be better. But I always figured, you know, if $4.50 gas is better than $3.50 gas, can you imagine where we would be if we had $5.50 or $6.50 gas? I always figured that if a little bit's good, a whole bunch more has got to be better. So, hell, while you're at it, let's raise the price of gas by $2 a gallon. You know, these guys aren't going to be satisfied with a dollar. They're going to be back for a 10-cent increase and then a 15-cent increase. As soon as they get this dollar a gallon carbon tax passed, that's like the income tax. Once they get the damn thing in there, boy, then they'll just raise it a little bit every year. They'll do like the schools did up in Idaho. They'll start out at zero, and you'll wake up one day, and pretty soon, like over in Europe. So you people over in Europe paying $6 a gallon for gas, hell, you're not paying for the gasoline, you're paying taxes. You see, the real price of gas is about $2 a gallon. They got a wholesale price for gasoline here in the States, and it's reported in the International Forecaster every week, in fact, twice a week. And I forgot what it was now, but it was $2 and, I don't know, 52 cents, I believe it was, 252. That's the wholesale price of gas at the refinery. Now, the price that we're paying here is around $3 and, I don't know, $3.50. 330 or 335 or something, rounded off to 350. So about $1 of that is wrapped up in tax and transportation. Well, hell, 42 cents of it, they got posted on the pump. 42 cents posted on the pump, and they tell us that that's our tax. Well, now you people over in Holland paying the highest rate of for gasoline, you people are paying about, oh shucks, 250 to 650, 250, 350, 450, 550. You're paying about $4 a gallon tax right now. And they're going to raise your tax $1 a gallon. This, they're proposing this through the United Nations, and they're proposing that this go on here worldwide. You people that are paying 12 cents a gallon for gasoline in Venezuela, the proposal is that you pay $1.12. And you know, you people in Nigeria, you're only paying about 35 cents, so they want you to pay $1.35. And for those of us living in the United States, you know, you're sitting here saying, well, I can't make ends meet now. Boys and girls, most of the people in the world live on $2 a day. And they want to raise the price of gas on those people $1 a gallon, just like you and me. Can you see the devastating results that this is going to have on the poor? This is a death sentence for the poor. And while you and I here in this country are going to be inconvenienced, it's going to make the difference between living and dying for people in the third world. Of course, that fits in with Global 2000, doesn't it? And the proposal that we reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. Hey, I'm about out of time. Let me remind you that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Your time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.